From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today, with the World Cup underway in South Africa, we talk about Iowa's ties to the planet's most popular sport. The head coach of Iowa's Premier Development League soccer team, the Des Moines Menace, Lori Calloway, joins us. Also, his native South African assistant, Nathan Gibson, and Menace midfielder, Moloto. We'll ask them what kind of foothold soccer has in Iowa's sports landscape. Exchange listeners, have you caught World Cup fever? Tell us this hour about your favorite breathtaking World Cup moment. A World Cup edition of The Exchange kicks off right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The World Cup has kicked off in South Africa, and in their opening match on Saturday, the underdog U.S. team tied England. And here's a test to find out if you've caught World Cup fever yet. How many times since Saturday's game have you mentioned that blunder by England's goalie, Robert Green, that allowed the U.S.'s only goal? How many times have you mentioned that to family, friends, and colleagues? The more times you've spoken about it, the higher your World Cup fever. In this hour, we want to talk about the World Cup and ask, what kind of foothold soccer has in the U.S., in Iowa's sports landscape? Joining us for this hour from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, Lori Calloway, head coach and director of soccer for Iowa's Premier Development League team, the Des Moines Menace. Calloway has amassed more than 200 wins in his coaching career that started in 1978. His professional playing career spanned from 1962 to 79, including stints with six English teams and final five seasons with North American Soccer League's San Jose Earthquakes. Lori Calloway, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
Nathan Gibson also joining us from the studios in Des Moines, a native of South Africa. He is the assistant head coach and director of coaching with the Menace. Nathan, welcome to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
And also a gentleman who goes by the name of Moloto, I understand, from South Africa, midfield for the Menace. Moloto, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, gentlemen. So according to my little test, how high is your fever? How many times have you talked about the English goalie's blunder there?
I don't want to talk about it, to be honest. But people ask me about it all the time.
Would you have a short comment on it?
Well, it's one of those things. I think he's proved to be the best keeper of the three in the last couple of years in the Premier League in England, and I hope that Capello goes with him for the next game, because I think he'll be on another planet for the next game. So it's just one of those things that happens every now and again to a goalkeeper in front of the world stage. It's one of the worst experiences you could probably have, and I just feel for the guy. He must be going through a heck of a lot right now.
Exchange listeners, we want to know if you have caught World Cup fever. Tell us about your favorite breathtaking World Cup moment, and what do you think makes soccer the world's most popular sport? Why perhaps the passion in the U.S. doesn't match that in the rest of the world? Lori Calloway, would you please start off by telling us about the Des Moines Menace, for those not familiar with it, and about the Premier Development League?
Well, the Des Moines Menace is a part of a league that is primarily for college players in the summer months when they're out of school. It's a very, very strong league because some of the top players in college who will move on to the professional ranks play in the league. Des Moines Menace is one of the premier teams in that league, run as a professional club, although we have to remain an amateur status to protect the players' eligibility in college. We're perennially in the playoffs, won the championship once. Carl Krause, the owner of Come and Go, acquired the team 17 years ago, I believe 15 years ago. I think the franchise is 17 years old, so it's one of the oldest soccer franchises in the United States. And it's just a part of the sports fabric here in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. Where are the other teams in the country? They spread all across the country. How many are there?
Well, in 64, and they play in divisions, and then, you know, have conference championships just like this at the NFL, where they all come together and there's a Final Four and then there's a champion. They stretch us virtually to every point of the United States, including Canada. We go to Thunder Bay, for instance, this weekend to play two games against Thunder Bay. There are teams in Florida, the Southwest, the Northeast, the Heartland. We have a division here in the Heartland with Kansas City, St. Louis, Springfield, teams like that. And we could end up playing on the West Coast, the East Coast in the championships. We like to try and host championships if we get there. But it's a very extensive league and a tremendous league for the development of young players coming out of college.
So for those familiar with baseball, this is sort of, if it were baseball, it would be the minor leagues, an entry level, and people have a place to go from there, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And so your players would be aspiring to the Major League Soccer League. Is that what it's called?
Yes, the league below that. If they're not quite good enough, we have the what they call the NASL, which is the Triple A baseball version of soccer in this country. That's the team we're playing on Tuesday night from St. Louis, a pro team in the Open Cup, which is a cup extended to amateur teams from all over the country, finally coming down to a final 32 with the PDL, the D2, or the NASL teams and the Major League Soccer teams involved in that last stages of that tournament.
What kind of turnout do you get generally for your games, or does it vary depending on where you're playing?
On the road, we get not very good crowds. Teams in general can't promote their clubs like we can with Come and Go. And we probably get anywhere between 100 and 500 people on the road. Obviously, we eclipse everybody in the league, I think, here with 3,500 to 4,000 people. Mm. We've had as many as 4 to 5, very rarely less than 3.
So other teams coming in are loving to come to Des Moines and play.
Well, that's what I tell the players all the time. You know, we're the menace, and everybody wants to come here, even though they might not win. They enjoy playing in front of, you know, every athlete enjoys playing in front of crowds instead of one or two parents. And so it's a big deal for them, and that puts extra pressure on us. And because we're such a successful team on the field as well as off the field, the players have to understand that. And the biggest part of my job is getting those guys to buy into that. You know, they come from different institutions, colleges, where their loyalties lie. And then for 3 months, we want them to put on the Menace shirt and wear it, you know, wear the heart on the sleeve and play for the Menace. And sometimes that takes a little while to do in the early part of the season. I think we're getting there right now. We had some tremendous performances this last week with gutsy comebacks and playing in adverse conditions in Colorado, two games back-to-back, and then Saturday night here against Colorado again, then traveling 7 hours for the next day to play at 5 o'clock in St. Louis last night. So showed a lot of spirit, a lot of passion and desire, and we were pleased with those performances.
Exchange listeners, we want to reach out to you this hour. Get your comments, questions, or tell us about your favorite breathtaking World Cup moment. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. I want to go to the three of you and have you your observations about the U.S. team in the World Cup this year, their chances, their strengths, their weaknesses. Lori, would you start that? I understand you have some personal connections with this team as well.
With the U.S. team?
Yes, you know some of the people on the U.S. team. Or the coaches.
Yes. Yeah, I know Bob Bradley, the coach. His assistant coach, Mike Sorba, I know them very well. Sunil Gulati, the president of the United States Soccer Federation, I know him extremely well from my days in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And I really want the U.S. to do well. I thought the result was perfect for me. At the weekend, it wasn't the greatest game. England's in my blood, obviously, because I'll always want them to do well. US, if England's not involved, that's the team I'm rooting for in the tournaments that England are not involved in. And so to tie 1-1, the way it looked early on, it's going to be a blowout, and that would have been the worst thing for US soccer. And I'd have felt like I'd wasted 35 years of my time trying to help soccer improve here. So to get that result, even though it was a quirky way to get the tie, I think was great for the U.S. And a lot of hype probably a little bit too much hype about the game, because I think these two teams are still going to finish first and second in the group. So, you know, at the end of the day, if they play each other in the semi-final, that's when the rubber meets the road, sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. Nathan Gibson, your observation on the U.S. team.
Yeah, I think, you know, they've, over the years, the quality is definitely improved, especially if you have a look at the roster and you see how many of the lads are playing overseas. That's definitely going to bring an added advantage back home and in this environment. Definitely, with all that experience, is fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, the U.S. In the short period of time that they've, you know, been in the game, to be in the World Cup as often as they have, I think is fantastic. I mean, the boys are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you talk about that opportunity as a former striker. Clint Dempsey is a fantastic player. And it doesn't matter how you score goals. You know, there's also moments as well as a striker where the monkey is on the back, as you can say,
yep.
And you don't score, you know, and it's goals like that lift the spirits, the confidence, and get you going. And in a World Cup environment, it's fantastic.
Well, viewers had to notice a big difference if they watched the U.S.-England game and then watched the Germans play on the weekend. The Germans, with such precision, they seemed like they were in a league of their own in that game against Australia, didn't they?
Well, to be honest, you know, we were playing ourselves. I didn't really get to see much of the game and the goals, but hopefully we'll, you know, at some point see some of the recorded game here shortly in the day or two.
Okay, Molonto, your observations about the U.S. team before we take a short break. We have about a minute.
I think the U.S. team, like, they have a good team, and obviously I'm hoping that they make it to the qualifiers and maybe to the semifinals, and hopefully they'll play South Africa, which is, I'm hoping that one day it will happen.
And how would you be rooting for a tie as well, a draw in that case as well? Or probably we'd let you go with your native South African to root for them, I think, Molonto.
Yeah, obviously I'll have to go with South Africa.
Okay, very good. Gentlemen, stay with us. When we come back, I want to ask the three of you what it will take to get more of a passion about soccer in the U.S., what's been preventing it up to this point. And we want to ask our listeners to join our conversation. Here's your chance to convert someone listening. If you're a rabid World Cup fan, convert someone listening. Tell us why you think soccer is so exciting, and tell us about your favorite breathtaking World Cup moment. 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter, @IPRTalk. When we come back, more about the World Cup and Iowa, the U.S.'s place, Iowa's place in the World Cup, and how to get World Cup fever.
L'envia cap a la dreta per Xavi, assistència de Xavi, més cap a la dreta per Messi, 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 i menys Messi, encara 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 Messi, gol, 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 però més i més i més, però més, però molt més, però molt, 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 molt més.
And we have World Cup fever here on The Exchange with Laurie Calloway, head coach and director of soccer for the Iowa's Premier Development League team, the very popular, very successful Des Moines Menace. Also Nathan Gibson with us, assistant head coach, director of coaching for the Menace, and Molonto, a midfielder for the Menace, joining us to talk about it. 1-866-780-9100. Question, comments, observations about soccer culture in the United States. 1-866-780-9100. TheExchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter, IPR Talks. Gentlemen, let's go around the horn and get your observations about the popularity of soccer in the U.S. We've had several generations since I remember being a kid. We thought it was going to take off with Pele in the 1970s. Why has it caught on just about everywhere else but here in the world? Not to say there aren't avid fans here, but it's certainly not in the major sports column in the United States. Laurie Calloway, would you take that first of all?
Yes, and I came to the United States to play professionally at the time that Pelé played, I was fortunate enough or unfortunate enough, whichever way you look at it, to play against him three times.
Wow.
And he was a fantastic player. And the crowds were huge because of players like Pelé, Beckenbauer, Cruyff, some of the world names then. But for some, unfortunately, it wasn't a single-entity league then, and the top clubs like the Cosmos, supported, were backed by Warner Communications, were just throwing money at people like Pelé. A lot of the other lesser clubs were trying to follow suit and went under because of it, because they were bringing in players that just... There was only one Pelé in the world at that time, and the other players, although recognised around the world, weren't recognised here. So that was their key to success, but they had a faulted business plan, and it didn't pan out. Mm. I think this new league, because and let's face it, the World Cup here in the 1990s was a tremendous, I think, eye opener for the American public and the American media. People seeing 350 journalists at a practice for Brazil in Santa Clara, California. Well, what's going on here? We don't get this for football. We don't get this for basketball. We don't get this for hockey or baseball. And or even if our national team at some level, like a hockey team, is playing in the Olympics, they wouldn't get that many media. So I think that was an eye-opener, particularly for the media, and they started to cover the game more. It was an eye-opener to sponsors who sponsored that World Cup. And subsequently, after the World Cup was over, those sponsors put their money into a league. And this league is growing steadily. Most of the franchises now have their own stadiums, so it shows that the owners of clubs are vested in their teams. They wouldn't be spending millions on stadiums otherwise. And some of these owners are very powerful, obviously, big men in the financial world in the United States. And I think that has now shown that the game has got a foothold. And it's not going to happen overnight. I certainly think it can take its place alongside hockey. When I got here, there was a team in California, played for the Earthquakes, San Jose. There's a team called the California Seals, and we had far more people in the stands than the California Seals did in the NHL. Mm. Subsequently, they moved on. NHL at that time was a little bit like the MLS at this time, in the United States anyway. And now the franchises are worth millions. An MLS franchise can be considered worth what NHL was back then. And it's just a matter of evolution and growth. The sponsors getting behind the MLS, staying behind it. The emergence of the game at the collegiate level, the high school level, where we now have full-time coaches at college and high school. There's very few club programs now in high school, where it was always a club sport when I got here. So I've seen tremendous growth, and I think there will continue to be growth. I think it will take its place alongside maybe hockey one day as the fourth major league sport. In this country, and certainly is on the right road to doing that.
Nathan Gibson, what comments do you have to add to Laurie Calloway's?
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. Also on the other end, too, with the youngsters now, it's going to take the sort of moms and dads who've played the game a little bit now, who have got youngsters. I've got two kids of my own, and being able to give back in the community and coach these youngsters now, they've got to be able to get their own little 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, 5v5s going and, pick their favorite player. And even in my day, it was Kevin Keegan, Georgia Best. And depending on what position I played with my mates, I was Georgia Best. I didn't want to, give up. I didn't want to lose. I wanted to be the top goal scorer. Georgia Best was the best. And that's what it's going to take with our youngsters today. Even with our camps and our clinics that we've got going on. I mean, anymore from the first time I was here in Des Moines in 2002 to today, running our junior men's clinics, the youngsters have improved tremendously. And I put that down to, the parents being a little bit more educated in the game. And the kids have got a little bit of that support from the parents or the dad to help them understand a little bit better, encourage them to get out. And soccer is proving to be a really good physical game, healthy game for the individuals. So, today you've got more kids playing soccer than you do your traditional American sports. Mm-hmm. And that's something to be said there. So, it won't be long. And, you know, you're going to have this country going crazy as well with soccer, more so than today, and it's beautiful today.
You know? Maloto, I want to ask you, since you come from a culture, as well as Nathan, from a culture in South Africa where soccer is ingrained in the national culture. When you look at the youth, for example, here, what differences do you see in the way the youth look at soccer here compared to your home country of South Africa?
To be honest, I have learned a lot since coming to America. And obviously, we have professional teams in South Africa, and they invest in development, like they put money in developing players. And I think there's a difference between, that's the only difference between South Africa and soccer in America, because in South Africa, we have a lot of professional teams that invest money in developing young players. And obviously, it's coming okay in America, too, because since I came here, I've learned a lot from all my coaches at college, Coach Laurie. And I think it's a privilege to be in America. So
Laurie,
I think soccer is not that bad.
Laurie Calloway, I've heard the observation made that the U.S. has such major sports that our attention as a nation is saturated with football, basketball, baseball, and there may simply not be room for another professional sport of that caliber.
I think because of the size of the nation, I'm not sure it's 300 million or more now, there is a place for it, because there are there's a lot of people with ethnic backgrounds. Obviously, everybody's got an ethnic background from somewhere in the United States, but, you know, recent ethnic backgrounds, where there's that support, the support and understanding of the game at the youth, high school and collegiate level is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, for instance, college games, when I watched them 35 years ago when I came, there were maybe 50, 60 people. Now they can draw 3, 4, 5,000 people to college games. And so the interest is there. I feel that there is a place for it. I honestly do. I don't think the country is so big and so large, and there's so much more awareness of the sport now than there was back then. Yes, the criticisms are there may never be a place for it, that's too low scoring. But, you know, I equate that to a 3-1 soccer game is a 21-7 football game. So let's award 1 point for a touchdown and a field goal and a conversion. So, you know, and then this is a culture that wants high scoring. It is a culture that wants wins. So ties are sort of disturbing to some people. But I think once we've educated the American public to understand the beauty of a defensive game, a game that was played well defensive, the goalkeeper's performance, the defenders, then, you know, and that's happening. It's tremendous. There's a tremendous amount of awareness now of that compared to when I came 35 years ago.
Laurie Calloway is with us, head coach and director of soccer for Iowa's Premier League development team, the Des Moines Menace. Nathan Gibson, also of the Menace, and Maloto with us as well. If you'd like to join our conversation when we come back from a break, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter @IPRTalk. Back with more World Cup soccer talk in just a few minutes. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio, today with World Cup fever. We're back with The Exchange. The biggest book of summer so far has a heroine who was born in Iowa. And tomorrow I'll talk with best-selling author and Iowa Writers Workshop graduate Justin Cronin about the dark-haired little girl from Iowa who is at the heart of his massive new vampire novel, The Passage. It's about a band of people who attempt to survive in a small colony surrounded by vampires. And these are not the sexy vampires. They are the real monsters. Join us tomorrow, Justin Cronin, to talk about The Passage, Tuesday on The Exchange. Today, we have World Cup fever. The World Cup has kicked off in South Africa in their opening match on Saturday. the underdog U.S. team tied England. Joining us today, Lori Calloway, head coach and director of soccer for Iowa's Premier League Development team, the Des Moines Menace, Nathan Gibson, assistant head coach of the Menace, and Maloto, also of the Menace. He plays midfielder. If you have a question or comment you'd like to share with us in the remainder of the hour, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go right to the phones. Tom is joining us from Cedar Falls. Good afternoon. Cedar Rapids, rather. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, what is your observation about the popularity of the World Cup soccer in general in the U.S.?
Well, soccer in general. I've got a couple of sons who are in about 30, and, you know, I grew up in the United States playing the normal things, baseball, football, stuff like that. My kids played a little bit of soccer, but I had the great privilege of visiting my youngest, who lives in Seattle, and he's been a season ticket holder with the Seattle Sounders since their first year. We went to the opening game this year, had to pay a fortune to get four tickets together. We stood up for the whole game in 50-degree weather and rain, and everybody else stood up for the whole game. Nobody sat down. Mm. I've never seen anything like it.
So Seattle definitely...
34,000 people stood up for the whole game.
Wow. Now, what did they have in Seattle that the rest of the country doesn't have, Tom?
What do they have? Well, they have, I don't know what the rest doesn't have, but in Seattle, it was definitely an event. I bought a Seattle Sounders baseball cap to wear around the day of the game. And everybody's, I was stopped a dozen times. Are you going to the game today? Are you going to the game? Hmm. What do you think? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was the talk of the town. They have quite the social gathering. They have a pep rally before the game starts. They have a band and speeches. And people walk the last six blocks to the stadium waving their scarves over their heads. I've never seen anything like it.
Soccer is often criticized in this country for those non-fans as being less than exciting to watch. In fact, it's easy to find people who think it's boring. Now, here's a short clip from The Simpsons that plays off this perception. The scene is a soccer match where three players of one team are simply kicking the ball back and forth, not attacking, not doing anything. From The Simpsons.
Boring!
Come on, you snorers! Do something!
Halfback passes to the center. Back to the wing. Back to the center. Center holds it. Holds it. Holds it.
And then the camera pans over to the play-by-play announcer in the next booth, who is a foreigner, saying the exact same play-by-play, but with a different tone, you will hear.
Halfback passes to center. Back to wing. Back to center. Center holds it! Holds it! Holds it!
I can't bear this any longer. I'm leaving.
Yeah, not before me, you ain't. Now, there's plenty of exits for everyone.
Satire about soccer in the U.S. from The Simpsons. So the joke here is that, Lori, that foreigners get excited about soccer for some mysterious reason. What is it that we don't get when we watch, some of us don't get when we watch the game?
Well, first of all, let me share with Tom. I coached in Seattle, Tom, and there is something special about Seattle. Their fans have accepted soccer right up there with their football and their major league sports teams. And when the Seattle Sounders were around before, I've played in front of a crowd there for the San Jose Earthquakes of 35,000-40,000 people. So I know that there is a passion there, and I think the way they've marketed it's a tremendous. A credit to that franchise and the league and what they're starting to do with some of the expansion franchises. The Simpsons, I've never watched The Simpsons because I don't like them, to be honest, but it's a satirical type of comedy. Soccer's an easy thing to pick on, and again.
Mm-hmm. What do you say? You've certainly heard this criticism: a 0-0 game, a 1-0 game. People just not, boring is in the eye of the beholder. Perhaps that if you don't understand the nuances of the game, of course you're going to find it boring, right?
That, exactly, and I could probably equate to that with my knowledge of American sports. I enjoy watching American sports because I'm a sports fanatic, but I don't understand some of the nuances of baseball. I enjoy watching football on the TV because there's, 12 minutes of action in a three-hour game right. Where the ball is in play. That's not coming from me. That's coming from football analysts. But it's a game ideally suited for TV because you can show a lot of commercials. The only two games I've ever been to in football was a game in San Francisco with the 49ers, and like everybody else in the private booth that I was a guest of, we watched it on the TV because you could see the in between the plays, which is the largest time factor in the game. You could see the action replays on the television, so it's ideally suited for TV, all credit to it. It's a tremendous part of the American sports culture. But again, it's in the eye of the beholder. As I said earlier, once Americans understand the way to watch or appreciate a game defensively well played by either one team or the other or both teams, which might create a 0-0 tie, then we'll be a lot further along. So I used to play cricket. People used to say that was boring. And I could probably equate that to baseball where, there's again, a lot of downtime, not a lot of action out there in terms of athletic action. So, what you believe in, what you're brought up with. A lot of Americans are being converted to soccer now through their kids probably. A lot of the kids that were parents way back are now fans of the game because they played the game. I think a lot of those fans you've seen in Seattle are people who played the game 20, 30 years ago when it started in Seattle at the youth level. And now, they probably wouldn't go and watch a Seahawks game or a Mariners game. So, that's, as you say, it's in the eye of the beholder.
Lori Calloway, head coach, director of soccer for Iowa's Premier Development League team, the Des Moines Menace. Nathan Gibson, I'm wondering if you can tell us how the style of play is different between countries. I think the wonderful part of watching World Cup soccer is the fact that we do see a tremendous difference in style from the Brazilians, the Argentinians, and the South Africans playing all different styles. So what's going on there?
Yeah, that's, for us, that's definitely, your personalities. You've got different personalities anywhere you go in the world. The Finns are a little bit more stoic. The Brazilians are a little bit more outgoing kind of people. Flamboyant, love to dance and party. And so you have a look at that, and that's what makes the World Cup so interesting and exciting to watch because they – of course, there's different styles. So I put it down to, of course, the personalities in the countries, the passion. It's just a obvious cultural feeling. Again, understanding of the game. You go back to the question earlier. If you take football and try and start football in South Africa, baseball in South Africa, basketball in South Africa, it's going to take a while before it kicks in, and that's just with soccer in America. But to go back to your question, it's the personalities of that country. It's the cultural feeling of the sport, the passion of the sport that brings it out. And when you get all those countries together in one location, it just makes for an interesting, exciting situation.
Ron from Waterloo asks in an email, do you suppose I could improve the image of soccer here in Iowa if I were to buy up a large number of those horns they blow constantly at the games in South Africa and sell them at matches here? So there are some those horns are really one of the stories coming out of the World Cup already. And I have to say, of watching a couple matches, those horns are what do you loud, have to say about that, Lori?
Loud. I mean, it sounds like there's a million bees stuck in a tin can.
But they're irritating to me, and I was I don't know where they originated from. I think Germany were one of the countries that used to do a lot of the horn blowing. Hey, again, people seem to be enjoying it. The merchandise people are selling a lot of horns, so they're happy.
Kevin is joining us from Marion. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Yeah. Well, you know, my comment is touches a little bit on what you've been talking about understanding the game, and that is that, you know, I think, you know, most of us that are probably over the age of 35, while we may have heard of soccer, didn't really have opportunity to play the game and develop an understanding for the game as a youth. You know, when I was younger, I played football and a little bit of basketball, and so even though I, you know, didn't play into college and so forth, I had an understanding of the game. And when I was, you know, in the mid-70s here in the greater Cedar Rapids area, there was one soccer league in town, probably had maybe 50 kids, 60 kids involved, and it was primarily European expats and their kids who were playing in the organization. And so we've, you know, and now my kid plays in an organization that has, you know, 150 teams and 1,300 kids and so forth. So it's just, you know, it's vastly different. I mean, I had an awareness that soccer was out there and kind of knew that you couldn't use your hands and what the ball looked like. You know, my son's is gonna take soccer as something that's just always been there and know what it is. And, you know, so I just think that, you know, it's hard to develop a you know, 80,000 people in a stadium to watch something if, you know, there's not this sort of growing up with it and wanting to go see it. And that doesn't come, and, you know, people my age probably are never going to have the same desire to watch a soccer match as we would a football or basketball game. But my kids and so forth, maybe they will, or hopefully they will.
This is what Lori was talking about earlier on when that group ages. Isn't that what you're saying, Lori? Those 35 and younger, when they age, become parents, that's when you get a substantial increase in the number of fans.
Yeah, and I think it's a sort of there's some nuances here as well. You know, when I came here, every director of Parks and Rec, every AD in school, every athletic director in school, none of them knew anything about soccer 35 years ago, or very little. And so when you had decisions made as to whether we're going to develop a new sports park, there were no soccer fields built in that sports park. Mm-hmm. I've seen a tremendous amount of difference in the last 20 years of because now athletic directors, parks and rec directors, people that make decisions, the decision makers relative to sports, are introducing far more facilities now for soccer. And football stadiums at high schools are being built so that you can actually play soccer with the proper width instead of 55 yards, which they always used to be. And just sort of nuances like that are changing the game and the face of soccer in this country, so that it is a sort of respected part of the sports culture now. But so that is happening as well, not just with the parents that of the kids now that used to play themselves and supporting the kids to play and going to watch games. It's happening at the sort of political levels as well. I see, you know, Joe Biden at one of the World Cup games, the South Africa game the other day. I went to the World Cup final in 94 and sat right in front of the president and Henry Kissinger and people like that. They are supporting the sport more and more and more. And so it's an evolution, and it's something that we'll see. I played 20 years ago in front of 54,000 people in Minnesota. I played in Rutherford in the Giants Stadium in front of 65,000 people. Coached a game there in front of 67,000 people. So the sport can happen here, and you know, it's it again reflects to Tom's comments earlier. There are two or three franchises: Los Angeles, Seattle, Portland are coming in next year, and they'll do the same thing. Toronto have not sold less than 21,000 tickets to every game, sold out since they started 3 years ago. And it's an interesting theory there. They're appealing to the young professional, 22 to 32, not really marketing to kids. Mm-hmm. There are kids at the games, but it's the young professional from downtown Toronto that work and are looking for sports opportunities that are supporting those games.
Yeah, that was a comment I wanted to get to, a question. Are there a certain type of person, demographic, that tends to follow soccer in the United States?
Well, I think we've all marketed to the youth for many, many years. And I think the MLS is figuring out that maybe it's a demographic of those kids that did play 20, 30 years ago that are now 25, 30 years old, that are still single maybe, that are looking for something to do on a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. I went to a game in Toronto. It was sold out. It was a Thursday night ESPN game, and people were coming in suits from work. They sold $250,000 of concessions that night. $200,000 of it was beer. So, I mean, it's sort of a... again, sports events are entertainment and social, and I think the soccer is, you know, gradually figuring out, yes, we've got to appeal to the youth. Yes, we want the youth at the games, but also we need to attract that young professional person who's got the sports dollar.
Stephanie is joining us as we close in on the end of the hour. Stephanie from Marion, good afternoon. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. I just had a comment. I have actually seen a soccer game in Bogota, Colombia, in South America, and I don't think people really understand until you actually see one like that, because it was noise all the time, concrete bleachers shaking, vibrating all the time with people jumping up and down and yelling. And when you watch a game like that, you cannot help but be excited about it and be able to see more of the nuances and stuff that go on in the game. It was just incredible.
Stephanie, thank you for joining us from Marion with that view here. How does the rest of the world view America's sort of lack of passion for soccer, Lori? Do you hear comments from around the world? Is it a puzzle to the rest of the world, as it is to us in some cases?
I think the unfortunately, and I'm ashamed to say it, I think the British, the English, the Germans, the Argentines, the top sports powers, and probably a lot of soccer nations who are maybe not ranked in the top 10, just figure that the United States as a soccer power is a joke. And yet here we are sitting 14th in the world out of 250 nations that started out to try and qualify for the final 32. It's not a joke. It's growing steadily. We're having a hard enough time to convince our own people here in the United States that it's for real. And I don't think we can probably ever convince the rest of the world, even after a result like they got on Saturday against England, until the United States win it or lose in the final, people in this country are going to always think it's second rate and around the world. Again, American fans want winners, and that's another obstacle we're faced with in this culture, that you've got to be number one, and unless you're number one, it doesn't mean anything. And unfortunately, we're 14th in a field of 250 right now, and perhaps that's not good enough or never will be good enough for American fans. But the foreign fan hasn't yet been... I mean, there's a lot of American fans very proud of the fact, let's face it, there's a tremendous amount of Americans very proud of where the United States is now. I think the fervor from last Saturday proved that around the nation. The fans in South Africa from the United States, I think there were more fans from the United States than England. It was... or just as many. And it's going to be a long time convincing everybody here that we're... everybody that we're for real. I think a lot of the nation is convinced that it's a valid sport in this country. Overseas, you know, let's get it right here first and convince everybody here. Then maybe 20 years from now, win the World Cup, and people will say, okay, we're like the hockey team, whereas we're number one in the world. And, you know, we have to sort of be patient and build towards that. And those of us in the game are patient, and sometimes it's frustrating to hear the criticisms and the... Yeah. But we're disciples. We believe in it. without us and people like us, the game maybe wouldn't be where it is right now. But we're going to keep pounding on the people's minds to look. Let's get behind this sport. It is it's the number one sport in the world, and the United States is probably the top country in the world, or thought of as. And so we want to be right up there with the way people think about America, most of the world think about America.
A quick question before we have to go. We've got just over a minute left. I've spoken with high school soccer coaches, and they've identified one big problem is that talented athletes young athletes are siphoned away in high school to higher status and potentially more lucrative sports like football, basketball. This is a problem, isn't it?
It is. And I have a daughter who's graduating this week from high school, and she's never really been a soccer player. She loves the game because of I'm involved in it. But on campus, the soccer guys are not the big guns. It's the quarterback, it's the pitcher, it's the, you know, and so there's a culture starts there early where
what about the women, though? There you can get a nice college scholarship, can't you?
Oh, yeah, I think that's different in the women's case. It's equal now, the scholarships, and the opportunities that this game has given women is probably one of the biggest things that's a positive in soccer in the United States. But as far as siphoning players away, when I came out here 35 years ago to San Jose, California, and Saratoga High School at a tryouts for soccer, there was 20 guys out there, and there were 200 out for football. And yes, in the next 10 years, while I was living in San Jose, that slowly became more and more even. And that really upset a lot of football coaches. But I think more and more parents were saying, well, my kid can't play that game at the ultimate level, the football, but he can play soccer. Or she can play soccer in terms of the women's game, the way it's grown. But it's not siphoning players away as much as it was, although, let's face it, if there's a guy that can kick field goals and he's a great soccer player, he's probably going to make three or four times more in kicking field goals than he will play in soccer. So,
Laurie Calloway, we have to go. Thank you very much, Laurie Calloway of the Des Moines Menace, also Nathan Gibson and Maloto of the Des Moines Menace. Thank you for spending the hour with us.
Thank you so much.
The Exchange is produced by Lindsay Moon, Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christoph Mai, John Pemble in Des Moines. We want to thank as well. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.